You've been cut off or refused welfare.
Used car salesmen and golf pros who run Ontario have decided your disability is no longer disabling.
Perhaps you're
economic
being forced
factors.
To work 140 hours a month to get your $500 welfare.
You or your
check.
Entire neighborhood have been brutalized by
you're
the
being
police.
Removed from Canada and sent to a country where you'll be killed or thrown
you're
in jail
being ticketed
and forgotten
often
about.
For not having a fixed address.
The shelter you stay in has no interest at all in human
you're
rights.
You're facing a government tribunal hearing without
the owner of
the
building
wants you out so it can take advantage of anti-tenant legislation.
You're being treated unjustly due to your economic position or skin color, and you're sick and tired of the corporate agenda and feel it's time to stand up and fight back. So what are you going to do? So who are you going to call? Well, if you're wise, you'll call OCAP, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. If you want our help, just call. If you want to join, give us a call to set up an introductory meeting, 925-6939 in the east, 530-1550 in the west.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to OCAP Radio on a lovely Friday evening in Toronto. We're going to go right off the bat to one of our special guests, and we've come full circle. We've had all of our special guests come on board, and we're going to go back to the top now and be joined shortly. By Sean Brandt, a member of OCAP. Member of the Mohawk Nation and currently residing in Thayendanegea, Mohawk Territory. We've talked about some of the things that Sean's going to talk about over the past few weeks here on OCAP Radio, and I'm just going to give you a little bit of background information to what we've been talking about. It was in 1999 that there was a hunt in Presque Isle Park by members of the Mohawk Nations. Or members of the Mohawk Nation of Thayendanegea, which brought large amounts of meat down to downtown Toronto. What they did was basically go in and cull the deer population, which was getting completely out of control. So they did the work of the Ministry of Natural Resources for them and helped to create a sustainable environment in Presque Isle Park. The last time we talked to Sean, he had just gone back into the park with some hunters and had culled that herd. But he is still on trial for the charges that he faced after the 1999 hunt. And we're joined by Sue Cullis. Sue, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Sue, I just told everybody about Sean's trial that he's currently in the middle of.
Yep.
But I mentioned a couple of weeks ago one of the name of one of the star witnesses that the Crown has brought. Do you want to give us an update of where the trial's at and especially about this... this professor from U of T, who they've
yes,
called?
Certainly. It's one Professor Alexander von Gernet. Apparently he teaches anthropology for the University of Toronto. And he really was the star witness presented by the Crown, spent a number of days on the stand, and made some rather alarming statements during that time. He was hired by the Department of Indian Affairs to prepare, a report as to what his testimony would be. And after 2 days on the stand, making at one point the comment that it was his personal belief that the Iroquois Confederacy never actually existed at all, but that it was simply a construct, a myth that was created by the British to intimidate the French at a time of war. And after that statement was made, OCAP actually took the liberty of running an internet search on the guy, just to see what sorts of ties he had. His own curriculum vitae. He proudly boasts that he has written for and lectured at Fraser Institute conferences. But we also found a very interesting article that was originally published by the Aboriginal newspaper Windspeaker, I guess this guy really has a reputation that precedes him, eh? And they, Windspeaker, had decided to run a Freedom of Information Act request on him, only to find that... the professor was, in fact, on contract for a 40-month period with both the research and litigation branch of the Department of Indian Affairs and the residential schools litigation branch, Department of Indian Affairs. That 40-month contract was, he was paid the lofty sum of $321,000 for that period, which, if you do the math, break it down, it comes up to just over $8,000 a month. Of course, the actual per diem rate that he was paid, the actual hours and days worked, were blacked out by department officials. So just how much money he was being paid is an unknown.
Sue, I just want to go back to that point you made about...
I can't hear you very well.
Oh, sorry. Geez, I don't know how to fix that. So, because I think I'm going out clear on the airwaves, so I could boost myself a little bit. But I understand that, from my limited understanding of Iroquois Confederacy, that the Haudenosaunee was the original longhouse was part of that, which was sort of the democratic setup of people of different nations.
The Iroquois Confederacy was the five nations. Mm-hmm. The Mohawks being one of them, the easternmost nation, who came together as in many ways as a political construct that was unrivaled at its time, and is still regarded as one of the most, you know, finely woven societal fabrics or organizations ever to be in existence, and it goes back to well, like, centuries before, any contact or, invasion by colonizing peoples.
My question was that that setup was actually one of the models of democracy that was ripped off by the colonizers.
Well, poorly copied by... By the Americans, yeah.
Okay, because it seems kind of ironic then suggest that it's gone the other way around. Not totally out of joint with other rewriters of history that we know throughout throughout the academy.
Yeah, but to make the statement that he did is just it's an unbelievable statement to make, and I think most certainly within, you know, as testimony within a court case, it's highly problematic. What's happened since then is that an expert testifying on behalf of the defense systematically has gone through Professor von Gernitz, the report that he prepared, and found that this is rough, but roughly 70%, 70 out of 100 of the references or the footnotes that he makes are attributable to two scholars who, have incredibly questionable credentials that sort of academia across the field has actually had conferences to meet about how, problematic and essentially racist their positions on these matters are. And this is who this man is relying on. So, it's, in one sense, it's, it's alarming. In another sense, his testimony was just virtually shredded. He was not a good day for bigots in Canada yesterday.
Right on. I was going to say a lot of times that this is the sort of the nature of academia where under the rubric of free speech they're allowed to say whatever they want and then have that legitimacy.
Well, that's right. It's like a exclusive clique, and there's no actual research done. It's just a simple matter of, this person has, makes reference to this, and I'm going to make reference to that person, and it goes around in a circular sort of way and never has to touch the ground.
I was reminded of the one of the big sort of mythologies that's worked its way into the whole totality of North American academia of Columbus sailing across the ocean and with all his benevolence greeting the savages and taming them and just what a just a charade that is, and one of the greatest mythologies of our time.
For sure.
Could you also talk about what's sort of going on between in Grassy Narrows. I wonder if you're at all up to date on that.
I'm not hugely up on that, except to say that it's a small community up north, not too far from Winnipeg or the Manitoba border, that has been dealing with clear cutting directly around the community. There was a number of people that went up, I guess, this past weekend. There's been a blockade that's been organized and running since, I believe it was December 3rd of last year. What, to my understanding, is currently there has been the practice is that the trucks have had the shortest route to the trees shut down. So what originally was a 5-hour drive has turned into an 11-hour drive each way to get the logs out. Just prior to when folks that we knew who went up, there was some 17-hour standoff where trucks were completely stopped, told that they weren't allowed through. There was a number of police at that point that was called. The community, the wider community members, came out to support those on the lines, and the forestry company in that instance had to capitulate. my understanding is at one point the truck said, "Okay, well, let us leave," and they were held at the same location for another 7 hours just for punishment. but it's definitely a tense situation, a volatile situation. The community is digging in. They know that that there'll be nothing won without that kind of solid resistance and a fight. And it's also our understanding that the military is beginning to show a presence up in terms of recon. So it could be a very hot issue very soon.
So just to change track a little bit, I understand that there are some interesting scandals coming out of City Hall in Belleville, or a linkage between City Hall and certain slum tenements in Belleville.
That's right.
That's more explicit than usual, even.
That's right. Well, certainly Belleville, no different really than any other city, has a problem with rundown tenancy apartment dwellings. Where the buildings department in the city, for whatever reason, is either doesn't do inspections properly, or when inspections are done, the landlords fail to do the appropriate repairs. So that situation is certainly duplicated in the city of Belleville. However, there's perhaps a somewhat unique twist in that some of the larger buildings in the downtown area and some of the more run-down ones happen to be owned by the mayor. It's Mayor George Zagoras. The tenant action group in Belleville is currently in the process of putting together a campaign that will highlight the mayor's the mayor's personal involvement in these kinds of issues and begin to systematically take them on. There's been a number of tenants meetings in some of his buildings and others throughout the downtown area to very positive responses. There's a number of tenants who are willing to come forward and start to lay those grievances right at the foot of City Hall. So it'll be an interesting time and definitely a really good campaign to get off the ground.
On the sort of coming into the spring and early summer, as you are well aware, OCAP is looking to put together a housing campaign that OCAP's work certainly will be focused primarily on Toronto, but we're looking to allies across the country. Could you give us a little hot tip or advance notice of the type of stuff you're planning on bringing out in Belleville in the coming year?
Well, not so much in terms of specifics. Obviously, this particular campaign is will be a central focus because it can bring in both the building's inspections department as well as the mayor and other politicians themselves. But I I would say that it does strike me that not just Belleville, but you know, pretty well anywhere that you you look across the province, or indeed across the country, to places where organized anti-poverty groups exist, that housing already is number one on the agenda, that a number of different places are already looking at, or have already been doing, taking such actions like the building takeovers and the squats. And I think that there is a real desire to put those pieces together in a way where, you know, actions can respond one city to another, or can be seen to be pressuring along the same demands. I think it's a matter of properly laying out the groundwork, but that we're in a position now where there are significant numbers of people mobilized around those issues, that if we play our cards right, we can ensure a greater impact on you know, the various levels of government in this matter.
Sue, we're just about to wrap up this segment of the show. I was wondering if you have anything further to say about the trial, and if there's any way people want to lend support if they can.
The trial here?
Yeah.
Like the trial out here?
Yeah.
The Presqu'île trial?
Yes.
Well, no, just you know, we'll be sending out updates as it continues. It's, you know, it's been a long time since 1999. Sort of the light is at the end of the tunnel. It's going to wrap up shortly, but you know, at this point, it's, I mean, it's if the guys are found not guilty, it will simply be an affirmation of what Mohawk people have long known and understood to be true and practiced in terms of recognizing territorial lands and the right to hunt on them. It's certainly not a situation where the trial, you know, a winning verdict is going to bestow any rights upon anyone. It's, you know, it's more of an affirmation. And like, you know, if you've been talking about the fact that there was a second harvest at the same park this year in 2003, it's a clear indication that the outcome of the trial is, you know, not terribly meaningful to what people in the community of Tynanega will do in terms of, you know, understanding or recognizing and practicing their right to hunt throughout the Mohawk Nation territory.
Right on. Sue Collis, live from Tynanega. Thanks so much for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
CKLN's African Caucus will commemorate African Liberation Month 2003, a.k.a. Black History Month, beginning Saturday, February 1st. Saturday Morning Live will have a free-flowing discussion on reparations led by Sakaya Thomas, a leading member of the Global African Congress, February 1st. On February 8th, the caucus will pay tribute to Antiguan revolutionary Tim Hector. The focus switches to African-Canadian youth on February 15th. And the month ends with the 10th annual Black Addicts in Recovery radio show, which will take place on February 22nd. This year, CKLN's African Caucus will commemorate the centenary of the publication of W.E.B. Du Bois' classic book, The Soul of Black Folks, the 40th year of Kenya's independence, the 20th anniversary of the assassination of Jacqueline Kreft, Maurice Bishop, Unison Whiteman, Vincent Noel, and Fitzroy and Norris Bain. Individuals and organizations like Dwayne Morgan, Curtis Bailey, Sharon McLeod, Muyonzwe Hamalingwa, Umurunge, Black Youth United, and others will program shows during African Liberation Month. Stay tuned for African Liberation Month during the month of February on CKLN 88.1.
And you're tuned in to Radio OCAPS here on CKLN 88.1 FM, www.ckln.fm on your internet dial. Recent developments in the news that OCAP is following closely. We all know about the Toronto Star's expose on racial profiling that has kicked up a little bit of a shitstorm in the mainstream media and among the police brass. No big news to anybody who's experienced police brutality or their allies, but just the level of consistent denunciation of people who come forward with their experiences and allies who are attempting to support them in seeking justice. It is just astounding that to this day the police chief denies that that this is a problem, that this is a systemic problem. It's a widespread problem. It's something that is unacceptable and has to stop. And that it really is part of policing culture as we know it here in North America. And the police has been doing these town hall sessions around the city. And the first one, he got a young woman came up to the microphone and asked him why he was burying his head in the sand on this issue. And he told her that her comments were inappropriate, which just want to say to you, Julian, that we think your comment was inappropriate and really disrespectful of this woman's concerns. The following two town hall meetings that he had after that went a lot more smoothly for him. Nobody really challenged him on his record, and there was, talk about safer neighborhoods and so forth, but not much about the actual culture of policing that exists in Toronto. And I guess just sort of to pour a little salt on the wound and to flip his middle finger up at this issue, Julian Fantino has, I believe he still is in Jamaica right now, because the message that he is sending out to the whole city of Toronto and to our Black community is that that is where organized crime comes from. Just another sad example of the racism that just rots the whole forest from the top down. And just a limitless arrogance that that comes with that self-satisfaction that the chief has around this issue. But if you're as disgusted as we are by the situation, there is something you can do, and Mike's going to update you on an action that you can take part in and let yourself be heard.
That's right. OCAP is basically... If you're in the 51 Division area, east of Jarvis, but west of the Don River, you may have noticed a nice little poster that's gone up around town, basically inviting everyone to come out to the 51 Division Town Hall meeting. We would like to encourage absolutely everybody to come out to not only the 51 Division meeting to help us confront Fantino, but also to the various meetings that are going on around the city, and... there's going to be a whole slew of them coming up when Fantino returns from Jamaica. So I'd like to just give you a few dates right now. Basically, if you're in the downtown core, if you're in the west end of downtown, you're probably in either 11 or 14 Division, and they'll be having a joint town hall meeting at Bishop Morocco School on February 19th at 7 p.m., and that's at 1515 Bluer Street West. That's February 19th for 11 and 14 Division. And then coming right up to Tuesday, February 25th, we know that the residents and business associations are mobilizing for this. And we are too. Fantino in 51 Division. Don't let him forget Thomas Kerr. Don't let him forget the people who are endlessly ticketed and chased out of Allen Gardens. There's been enough shit go down in 51 Division that we could take up the whole show and not even get through... make a slight dent in the record of the police at 51 Division. So it's Tuesday, February 25th at Lord Dufferin School, 350 Parliament Street, and that's between Girard and Dundas, and that's also at 7 p.m. And if the chief still hasn't gotten scared into retirement after those two, hopefully there'll be enough noise raised, but on March 3rd, which is a Monday, 52 Division, and he'll be in Committee Room 1 at City Hall at 7 p.m., and that's the 52 Division. That basically takes up the central core of the downtown, and that's, once again, on March 3rd. And as well, if you are concerned specifically around the issue of racial profiling, there is another sort of, not a town hall meeting, but a meeting of the Toronto Police Services Board. The Toronto Police Services Board is made up of... not only Fantino, but Craig Brummel, Mel Lastman, and various other dignitaries who are supposedly watchdogs over the police, which is another discussion altogether, how screwed up that thought is. But anyways, the Toronto Police Services Board is holding their monthly meeting, and part of that discussion, the first half of that discussion, will be an opportunity for the public to make deputations. In other words, you get to speak for 5 minutes on what you think about racial profiling. It's taking place at Toronto Police Headquarters at 40 College Street. It begins at 2 p.m., and you have to register to make deputations beforehand, at least 5 days ahead. The meeting's on February 20th, which does not give you very much time, so please do call in ASAP and try to get on the list to make deputations. The number to call is 416-808-8080, and basically they'll tell you how to do it, but you just got to get your name on a list. Go down there at 2 p.m. on February 20th and check in and have your say in front of the assembled police watchdogs. So I encourage everyone to go out and do that, as well as to confront Fantino as he moves into our communities, and let him know that we are not pleased whatsoever with the way the police are handling, especially around the issues of chasing people out of parks, excessive ticketing, and of course racial profiling, and the random and often unprovoked beatings that occur on a regular basis in 51 Division that we hear about all the time. Encourage everyone to come out to the meeting in your area, as well as to join OCAP in confronting him in 51 Division on February 25th.
Just a footnote, folks, for those of you who are interested in making a deputation, this is the official governing body of the Toronto Police Services. So just basically confronting their bosses, which, you know, take it with a grain of salt, might not be worth anything, but you get your voice written down in the official log if that means anything. The one thing that you should be forewarned about is if you're prepared to do that, you will be videotaped at that meeting. So the process is set up to be intimidating, to discourage people from having any input into policing in Toronto. It's held at police headquarters. Used to be held at Metro Hall, but they decided that was too welcoming to people, so they moved it to the most intimidating location they could find. Even if you're not making a presentation, they might make you register just as a spectator there at police headquarters. So sadly, be prepared for a little more profiling right there on the spot if you show up to this meeting. But if you are interested in doing that, that's the procedure, and just be forewarned.
As well, OCAP has been doing a lot of work around something called the Personal Needs Allowance. If you tuned in a couple weeks ago to Gaetan Harous' segment, you probably heard about this. We were just moving into it then. Personal Needs Allowance is basically totaling $112 a month that is given out on a weekly basis to people who are living in Toronto's shelter system. As you should be aware, that people in Toronto's shelter system aren't eligible for Ontario Works Welfare, so they get personal needs allowance, from which is their only money that they are eligible to get. Basically, what's been going on is various various shelters around the city haven't been giving it out properly. What we've been hearing, especially around places like the Salvation Army, is that they set very arbitrary and very limited times for people to come by and pick it up. For instance, they'll say if you're not there between 11:30 and 12:30 or 11:30 and 1:30, you don't get it, and they won't make alternate arrangements. Now, various shelters have different policies. Some shelters are better than others. Some shelters would let you get it the next week. Some shelters would let you make arrangements to get it the next day. But in particular, the Maxwell Megan Center and various other Salvation Army outfits have very strict rules, and people just aren't getting their money. So what we've been doing is handing out leaflets and talking to people, particularly in the East End. And we've been hearing a lot of stories of people who aren't getting it. And we went down to Metro Hall just this past Monday with a gentleman named Trevor, who's resident at the Maxwell Megan Center on Sherbourne near Queen. And we went into Metro Hall. We sat down with a representative from Hostel Services. And about 20 minutes later, Trevor was informed that this past Thursday, just yesterday, when he went to pick up his PNA for this week, he would be issued with all the weeks from the past that he had missed. So it was a really good start to a PNA campaign. quick and easy victory, and we are assuring Hostel Services that the next time we go back, it will be with more than just one person. We're taking names and going through the drop-ins and talking to people, making sure that they get the money that's owed to them. The shelters are literally mandated by the government to give this money out and just can't be bothered, and nobody's holding them accountable to it. And what we're hoping ultimately to have come out of this, of course, is for the Salvation Army to clean up their act and change the rules under which they give it out. We don't want to have to keep bringing a parade of people down to Metro Hall to get their money. They should be able to get it where they're supposed to get it, which is at the shelter they stay at. But anyways, keep tuned in coming weeks for updates around that as we move forward and hopefully continue to challenge the Salvation Army. And moving back into the ugly world of the justice system, we had a particularly ugly look at the justice system this week. We had a young offender who was brought before the courts for her role in June 15th, 2000, demonstration at Queen's Park. It's a particularly incredible story. I'd like to go back to talk about the trial a little bit. When this young offender was called to testify on the allegations that she had severely injured Constable Charles Stern by hitting him with a stick while he was in the process of arresting someone else, the young offender showed incredible bravery, was incredibly inspirational to watch as she outlined, sparing no details, why she thought June 15th was important, why she thought that fundamental social change in the form of revolution was absolutely necessary in this society, and why she thought that it was perfectly legitimate that she went to June 15th and pressed those issues to the forefront, even in the face of lines of police sent there to protect the legislatures who pay their paycheck. And she was absolutely incredible to watch. It was awesome to watch that type of testimony be entered into the court, especially after having to sit through Charles Stern's unbelievably self-aggrandizing testimony about all the terrible things he suffered on June 15th, and it was just a really, really incredible thing. Unfortunately, the young offender's judge tends to be coming from a different angle than OCAP when he looks at societal issues, and just absolutely a bit of theater of the absurd at Old City Hall courtroom this past week. The judge basically, in his judgment, didn't touch on a single piece of evidence that had actually been entered in, didn't touch on the defense's case at all, and just basically went off in a, really, to tell you the truth, rather incoherent fashion about what he thought about demonstrations in general. And apparently in his view, despite this never really having been testified to or anybody really alleging it, he seems to think that police were doused in gasoline on June 15th so that a slightest spark could have lit them on fire. And he basically dismissed all defense witnesses on the grounds that they were demonstrators. And think about that for a minute. So the outcome, fairly predictable, was a guilty judgment, and the sentencing will be taking place on April 22nd, once again at Old City Hall courtroom at 10 a.m. And we encourage everyone to come out and show support for the young offender in this case. It's not really a surprise. Everyone was expecting it, but it's never a pretty thing to look at the ugliness of the system. And just to let everyone know regarding the other ongoing June 15th trial, you're not getting a lot of news about it. That's because the pretrial motions have just wrapped up. We're not allowed to talk about what the substance of those motions are, but I can tell you that the judge is currently pondering them. And for that reason, there will be no court until February 24th, which is not this coming Monday, but the Monday following, at which time the judge will come in and hopefully issue his final word on the pretrial motions. And it could be any time after that we move quickly into the actual trial. And of course, everyone's support will be necessary to come out to the courtroom for that, as well as to come out to all the other events that will be going on around the trial to show your support for the three defendants in that case. And a little bit of news about what's going on the streets. I hope everyone is aware of what's going on tomorrow, 1 p.m., at Dundas Square, which is located at Yonge and Dundas. A massive anti-war demonstration promises to be the biggest one yet in Toronto. They are taking place all around the world. It could be one of the biggest global days of protest ever. And OCAP will be there. I hope you will be there. And I'd just like to talk about a new initiative that's coming out in Toronto that OCAP is strongly supporting and will be marching with tomorrow, and that is the No One Is Illegal movement. No One Is Illegal, borrowing its name from a Montreal group of the same name, which has been organizing solidarity actions around Montreal's Algerian, Palestinian, and Kurdish communities, which are facing deportations. As you should be well aware, as you heard last week on the show with Stephanie, OCAP has been doing a tremendous amount of work around these issues these days. And there will be a formal, organized, No One Is Illegal contingent in tomorrow's march, marching under the banner of an end to all deportations status for each and every immigrant and refugee who enters this country, and an end to this this racist crap that's coming out of the mouth of both immigration officials and Minister of Public Security and Safety Bob Runciman's mouth regarding the detention of all immigrants and refugees and people who come into the country without papers. Just unbelievable stuff that we're hearing right now. The bills before Parliament right now are really, really scary stuff. And I encourage everyone to come out tomorrow to show their disapproval for war, but also to show that we know that the attacks on immigrants and refugees here in Canada are not taking place in a vacuum, and that the issues are very closely and tightly linked to those of the U.S. warmongering towards the Middle East. And I think we are just about out of time, but I think Bernie has a little something-something for you.
Well, yeah, we've still got a couple more minutes left. Sex to Soul Radio is coming up, so don't touch that dial, because it's got important news coming to you from the southern tip of Mexico there in Chiapas, so stay tuned for that. But before we switch over to Sex to Soul, a few weeks ago, Bob Runciman, our Minister of Public Safety and Security, the old Solicitor General, who's been renamed because of people's fear-mongering around terrorism, had issued a public statement that he believed that Ontario and Canada as a whole should move to an Australian system of dealing with refugees and immigrants, and that is jail them as soon as they hit Canadian soil, and lock them up and treat them as criminals. It's just one of the most offensive things to come out of a Tory mouth since Jim Flaherty advocated locking up all homeless people in Ontario. And so OCAP sent a letter to Mr. Runciman on January 15th, 2003, and I'll read that out to you. Minister Runciman, we, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, condemn the position you have taken on an expansion of detention facilities for all people in the province of Ontario who cannot provide adequate identity documents, as well as people who fall in the sweeping category of illegals. In fleeing circumstances of persecution and poverty, many people arriving on Canadian soil have been forced to leave their homes and families in great haste, under great duress. In doing so, people do not always have the ability to gather up documentation or plan the next stage of their flight. And yet, you are proposing to throw such people in jail first and ask questions later. In hoping to create a better life for themselves and their families, many people arriving on Canadian soil have not navigated the bewildering bureaucratic labyrinth of this country's immigration policy and procedure in advance. In addition, countless numbers of women, children, and men are refused and rejected by these procedures after they have spent years and thousands of dollars attempting to legitimize their status. And yet, you are proposing to throw such people in jail first and ask questions later. The economy of this province and that of this country profits from the underpaid, unprotected labor performed by people without status. Long hours, little pay, no benefits, no opportunity for further education or training are the reality for people unable to obtain work permits, health care coverage, or student loans. It is highly beneficial to the business interests protected so judiciously by the Tory party that people are exploited so severely, then thrown in jail and or deported from Canada. You, as Minister of Public Safety and Security, have no secret of your cooperation with Citizenship and Immigration Canada to expand long-term detention facilities for the people of which we have just spoken. You have eagerly called for Australian-style detention procedures. You have already increased spending to track and hunt down people without status and are calling for the screening of people before they even arrive safely in this country, as well as for the establishment of a North American security perimeter. We do not take your position lightly. It is not acceptable to call for a detention system modeled on the Australian isolation barracks erected thousands of miles from legal or linguistic support, where detainees are locked up for several years upon arrival, left to self-immolation, hunger strikes, and suicide attempts in utter desperation. It is not acceptable to call for an expansion of detention facilities at all. More reprehensible is that you would do so without any condemnation of the inhumane and destructive system that already exists. Indeed, the family detention facility at Toronto's Celebrity Inn has a despicable history. Denial of basic supplies to Canadian-born infants and children in jail because their only caregivers are their illegal parents. A pregnant illegal woman able only to claim the status of being the longest jailed inmate. No basic access to fresh air or exercise. All this in addition to a detention review process that makes any hope for release next to impossible for anyone unable to procure the, on average, $5,000 to $10,000 set by Immigration Canada officers. We see your recent public enthusiasm for increased jailing of people living in Ontario without status as an endorsement of stepping up the already racist and anti-poor workings of Immigration Canada. The broad catch-all of jailing illegals ensnares far too many people, and we have little faith that the questions after the fact will even come in any decent or egalitarian way. The Ontario Coalition is putting you on notice that your words and actions will not go unnoticed or unchecked. We stand behind people struggling to regularize their status in this province and country, and we are calling for an end to detention and deportation. We strongly suggest that you reevaluate your unbridled eagerness to jail on undocumented and, quote, illegal people in this province. And I just want to point out, too, the ongoing hypocrisy of both the governments of Ontario and other provinces around this country, and the federal government in telling people who arrive on this part of the world that they're not allowed to be here, that they have any say to say who and who should not be here, being that if anything's illegal, it's this government that is in violation of numerous treaties and the original two-row wampum that it established with the first peoples of this land. And if anybody is going to say who should stay here and who should go back to from where they came, it would be those First Nations people who would have that right, if it existed at all. And so it is. And just the utmost of hypocrisy that people who came here and took and stole and colonized this land would turn around and then tell other people that they can't come here take part in this society. And I think we'll wrap it up right here on that note. Any final words, Mike?
Just to let people know that you're going to have to go without OCAP Radio next week, but please do tune in at the same time because it's African Liberation Month on CKLN, and all week long there will be special programming, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with Mr. Don Whites and more news about immigration and poverty issues in Toronto and across Canada.
That's right. Thanks for tuning in, folks.
There is suffering in the street.